Luke Fox joins us now, NHL writer at Sportsnet, and Quick Shifts is up. And Luke, before we really dive into it, on a scale of 1 to 10, I know lots needs to be figured out, but what's the excitement level that we could, in the not-too-distant future, have NHL hockey back in our lives? Like, is a 10 not even doing it justice for you?
I might say 9 because I'm holding that 1 back until we get 100% confirmation. But, yeah, I'm pretty excited. It just feels like we went through 2 months of, hey, we're listening to all options and, we're entertaining all ideas. And now we have a tangible plan that you can put on paper and first buy-in rounds that we can debate. It seems like there's some tangible progress here. And, of course, there's tons of hurdles. There's testing. There's when. There's where. There's lots to figure out. There's quarantine and border crossing. But the fact that the players and the league are both on board with this structure has me excited. And I think has a lot of hockey fans excited.
Luke, Josh and I were kicking around earlier in the show the idea of the Leafs facing the Blue Jackets in this scenario that's at the very least right now laid out. Who knows if that changes, but let's just say that is what happens. Does that count as a playoff series? Like, you know what I mean? Because the top four seeds have already quote unquote qualified for the playoffs, and this is, like you mentioned, the buy-in, the play-in round. So let's just say the Leafs defeat the Blue Jackets. Does this count as the Leafs advancing to the second round of the playoffs for the first time in 16 years?
From my understanding, no. And I believe, from what I understand, that's in stone. The play-in round matchups, that's been agreed upon. So as long as they can find a hub that can, or two hubs that can handle 24 teams, this is what they're going to go with. What they're still debating, as far as I know, is more on the top four seeds of each conference, what their round robin is going to look like, and how much that's going to affect the seeding. But if this goes through, Toronto will play Columbus. That's not really up for debate. And from what I understand, that a play-in round will not be part of the official Stanley Cup tournament because they're trying to keep that as much like, recent tradition as possible, meaning four rounds, best of seven. So I don't know if they're just going to call it a play-in round. I don't know if those games, what I'm wondering, like, do those games kind of count towards the regular season if they're not officially the playoffs? Yeah. But it gives, these fringe teams like Montreal, Chicago, Arizona, the Rangers, three of those are massive markets. It gives those fringe teams a chance to get into the dance. It also, includes 24 markets as opposed to 16 to help build revenue, build excitement, sell jerseys and hats and all those things. So I understand why they're doing it that way. But I don't think they've formally termed what they're going to call that and if that's going to be part of the regular season, or if that's in terms of keeping stats, or if that's something else entirely.
Yeah, I wonder, like, will those stats just exist, like, in a vortex in some sort of parallel universe and not really count towards anything? That's going to be fascinating to see. And, I'm on board with this. The only thing that I really struggle with is what those top four teams in the East and West are going to do. I know there's talk about they're going to play each other as sort of a tune-up, but how logistically is that going to work? Because you don't necessarily want to go too hard and risk injury in games that don't really mean anything. Is there a discussion of maybe making those games have some sort of ramification on the playoffs, or is it really just going to be the case of, well, we need to get some game action, so why not play each other?
And that's why talks are still continuing. I think that's one of the main focuses. They can't have it mean everything because they have a bye, and all those teams want the bye, but at the same time they're going to be playing relatively meaningless games, and their first opponent will be all tuned up and ready to go after what should be a pretty intense 5-on-5. They could be, have a giant confidence boost because they knocked off a legitimate team, and now they're coming in with some momentum to, the first round, but, theoretically round two. So, and, you know, I asked Alex Killorn, and he said there might be a disadvantage to the teams that have the bye because they could be caught a little bit flat-footed if those games don't mean anything. So what they're trying to do is see if they that little round robin where each team plays three games, if that can affect the seeding. But then there's debate. Boston had such a big lead. If they lose two of their three round robin games, do they really deserve to lose the top seed? So this is the kind of thing that they're trying to figure out what's most fair. It's not going to please everyone, but that's what's still under debate over the next few, couple days, I believe.
About 20 minutes ago or so, Luke, we had seen, and Josh had mentioned this on the show, that we had seen our former teammate Nick Kyprios tweet out that the two teams that voted no to the proposal of the 31 teams, so it was 29-2, the two teams that voted no were the Hurricanes and the Lightning. Does that surprise you or not so much?
A little bit with the Lightning. I get that the Hurricanes may have voted no because technically, like we mentioned, they're not in the playoffs yet. And under the traditional format, if they had jumped in strictly based on playoff percentage, they would be in the round of 16, and they're not yet. They have to play their way in, and they have to beat a New York Rangers team that was really hot, in February, March, before the pause, a team that was really coming on. Mind you, you know, Carolina had some significant injuries and should get healthy. But I guess, you know, their reasoning would be, hey, we were legitimately in the, you know, top 16 traditional playoff. The Rangers had, I believe, about a 21% chance of making it if there was some way to play all 82. And all of a sudden, they're basically on equal footing. So I understand why they may have a little bit of a gripe with it, but hey, they're not the only one in that boat. I mean, the team that's at the greatest disadvantage, in my mind, would be the Pittsburgh Penguins, the fifth seed, who have to play the 12th seed, Montreal. And there's sites that track, you know, the percentage of chance that Montreal would have had to make the playoffs under, you know, an 82-game season, and it was less than 1%. Like, they're really throwing a bone to Montreal here. And now Pittsburgh's on the same ground as Montreal, and they voted yes, that they're fine with it. You know, you have to just take off your club hat a little bit and think about league-wide and realize, hey, this is for the good of the game. There's also a serious financial component, you know, that there's a reason why we're not playing. That it's 24 instead of 16. More games, more markets, more excitement, longer playoffs. You know, the league's just bleeding money right now. This is also a big financial play.
Luke Fox is with us, and I'm glad you brought up Montreal and Pittsburgh, because I remember there at various points there was discussion about maybe the play-in being a best of three, and now it sounds like it's going to be a best of five. And I feel like Montreal, Pittsburgh, like it seems as though there's always going to be this fear factor for teams when it comes to Carey Price, especially a healthy Carey Price. So how much do you think that singular possibility of Montreal in a best of three riding Carey Price, who could shut you out for three straight games at any given time, factored into the decision to say, you know what, we have to make this at least a best of five?
Yeah, I think it just makes sense. The longer the series, the better chance that the better team will win out. It's like if I play one hand of poker against Daniel Negreanu, or five hands, maybe I win three. But if we play more hands, he's going to win, right? Like the longer anything, the cream will rise to the top. So, you know, one of these underdogs is going to upset, whether it's Montreal, whether it's Chicago, knocking out Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in the play-in round, whether it's Arizona upsetting, like one of these, you know, four type bottom feeders, that the teams that had less than a 25% chance of even making the playoffs, one of them's going to upset because it is a fairly short round. But that's, you know what, that adds the excitement. And in my mind, say Montreal gets hot, I also, you know, straight up comparing roster to roster, I think Pittsburgh has the greater roster and they should win. But say one of these teams gets hot, they have to not only win for the normal four rounds plus the play-in round. That means they have to have 19 victories against solid teams. So it would be hard to throw an asterisk or begrudge any of these teams the cup if they are able to survive that. Because you know, say Montreal manages to find a way through Pittsburgh, then they're probably going to draw a Washington or a Tampa. Like, it's not going to be an easy road.
I wanted to look a little bit, Luke, at this Leafs-Blue Jackets potential play-in matchup. And, you know, on the Blue Jackets side of things, you know, we talk so much about Morgan Rielly being healthy. Well, Seth Jones is finally healthy, arguably one of the best, if not the best, defensemen in the NHL. Oliver Bjorkstrand likely going to be healthy, I think, after what was an ankle surgery, I want to say, or some kind of surgery he had earlier in the season. And others as healthy as well. But, you know, we know things are going to be sloppy when play actually does resume. How much do you think that factor will curtail the return of these players who had been injured?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing. I don't know if the injuries are going to favor one team or another. I mean, the Seth Jones thing's huge. Josh Anderson's a question mark still. It all depends on how his rehab goes and the timing of his return versus the timing of when this play-in round starts. But hey, Morgan Rielly was really hurting. Like, this extra time for him to heal. Jake Muzzin's foot is now healed. Ilya Mikheyev's wrist is now healed. So it goes both ways. You know, there was concerns that Freddie Anderson was getting overworked. That guy's had plenty of rest. There's going to be no workload complaints anymore. So I don't know if you know, the injury thing favors one team or another. What really interests me about that series is it's this stark difference in identity. The Leafs are all offense, deadly power play. Columbus Blue Jackets, 5-on-5, give up the least number of expected goals in the whole league. They have an incredible team that's committed to defense. John Tortorella, as you guys know, has them playing a really structured game, block shots, keep everything to the outside. They like to use the body. They like to cycle. The Leafs like to score off the rush and fly around. So it's, for me, that's really fascinating because it's a sharp contrast in styles. And I think it'll be one of the more intriguing play-in rounds for sure.
And kind of along those same offense versus defense lines, Luke, you know, the Blue Jackets have been getting pretty close to all-world goaltending from both Jonas Korpisalo, who I think got the contract extension recently, actually, and Elvis mm-hmm. Merlinkins. And how confident are you that those two can hold up in a relatively shorter playoff format against the top firepower that the Leafs' top lines bring?
Well, we almost always see an unproven goalie win a round or two. It's not that uncommon to see a goalie that hasn't done it, you know, stand on his head for a short amount of time. But I do wonder about that. I just think Freddie Anderson has so much more experience compared to the Blue Jackets goalies. They've combined for exactly zero playoff starts between the two of them. I'm not even sure which one of those guys they know they would start in a game one right now. I think they would have to see who's looking sharp at camp and who's feeling it. Whereas Freddie Anderson, you know, he's played in a lot more high-pressure games than those guys. So I would give the Leafs an edge in that department. It's the Columbus defense that would worry me the most.
So I want to ask you, in an earlier piece this week, your Leafs mailbag, the possibility of, or you know, just the idea, I guess, of the Leafs looking at Matt Murray as an option. And obviously there's a lot of moving parts there. He's an RFA. It would certainly mean probably trading Freddie Anderson. But is there a possibility that that could be maybe more in play than we might think?
I mean, I think if you're a GM, if you're running a team, you look at all options. And I'm sure Kyle Dubas is trying to think what happens after next season when Freddie Anderson, his contract's up and he's going to cost more than $5 million. I don't know if Matt Murray is the answer right now, because Pittsburgh has to make a decision after this playoff, if it happens, and hopefully it happens, because Matt Murray's an RFA. He's going to be asking for more money than Freddie Anderson makes, I would imagine. I mean, he has two Stanley Cup rings. He's been underpaid of late. He's got some pressure now with Tristan Jarry, who's also an RFA. So both those guys are going to be asking for money. So I have no doubt that he'll be available on the trade market for the right price. I just don't know if you're able to get him cheaper than Freddie Anderson, even if you believe he's a better goalie than Freddie Anderson. And I'm not sure he is. I mean, he kind of lost his starting job to Tristan Jarry this year. You know, Jarry was the one who went to the All-Star game to represent the Penguins. If I'm the Leafs, I think you go with a contract you know, a guy you know, and play it out. See how Freddie does in this playoff, and then maybe reevaluate if he has absolutely horrible play-in round or something like that. But I think you just kind of sit tight, play it out, see how Freddie is, and then maybe reevaluate after that.
Yeah, it seems hard to envision Matt Murray get for less than like 5.75 or yeah. 6 million. And then RFA, are they matching? Is it a trade? What are you going to have to surrender? Yeah, a lot of moving parts there. I got to ask you about Mike Babcock, who was on a Zoom conference earlier in the week with his McGill roots, you know, connecting with some alum there. Anything stand out and any inkling on if he's itching to get back on a National Hockey League bench in the near future?
So it was a very controlled Zoom call. He donated his time, as did Guy Boucher and a couple other coaches around the league to talk. It was run by McGill, his alma mater, and he always has, you know, strong ties to McGill. Even when the Leafs would roll through just for a night or two when they were playing the Canadiens, he'd make a point during the day before puck drop to swing by his old university and shake hands and talk to the people he knows there. So this was him doing a favor, helping out with a coaching and leadership conference. You know, he kind of talked in general terms about how to manage superstars, the value of team building, when you know you've got the right culture. He didn't really get into specifics about the Leafs. He fielded a couple questions from some of the aspiring coaches that attended this virtual seminar, but all the questioning was pre-approved, and it was all kind of general questions about leadership. I actually reached out to them and said, you know, can I ask some questions? And that was off limits. It was kind of, you know, he's going to lend his time, but it has to be about this topic. But he was taking notes during the seminar from what the other guys were saying. He was asking questions himself. He seemed very involved and keen, and it was kind of nice actually to hear his voice again and see him talking about, you know, Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner and Pavel Datsyuk. And no breaking news by any means, but his mind is certainly still on hockey.
Luke, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you a general question about what the off season will look like whenever we do get there, right? Whenever these playoffs, this 2014 playoff thing ends, actually does finish. I know you mentioned in quick shifts that, you know, we'll more than likely see contracts pushed back to, again, whenever the playoffs end. But do you feel it's likely that we'll see more fireworks when it comes to trades than perhaps other off seasons, given all the things that have happened so far?
Maybe more trades, just because I think free agency is going to be tough, just with the cap expected to be flat. So I don't know how much movement there's going to be that way. I know there's some resistance from the owners to approve the compliance buyouts, which, you know, certainly helps the GMs, you know, coming out of the last prolonged work stoppage. They were given a couple compliance buyouts where they could get out from a bad contract or two because the cap stagnated. I don't know if the appetite's going to be there on ownership's end for that, just because they don't have the kind of money coming in to say, hey, yeah, sure, here's $5 million. You can get rid of that mistake you made. So maybe that lends to more movement on the trade front, because the free agency market might be a little bit tougher to wedge some of these guys in.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting to see how things get navigated with the cap. Quickly, Sho and I were talking about this earlier in the show. There was a Puckpedia poll conducted in terms of agents and their relationship with GMs that they feel might be able to give their client the most favorable deal. And not surprisingly, Kyle Dubas was the runaway winner. I think he had 29% of the vote, and everyone else had 6%. So I guess industry-wide, is the thinking still that Kyle Dubas can be taken to the cleaners, or is that still just kind of overblown considering the way that the Marner-Matthews contract negotiations went?
Well, I think taken to the cleaners is a little bit harsh. I mean, he'll be the first one to admit that he probably wants to have the Nylander negotiations back in terms of not only how they unfolded, but probably the price that he gave them. I think by, and now it looks like a great deal since Willie had such a fabulous season, but at the time it was deemed a little bit above, you know, market average. And once you show some leniency on the first one, it kind of set the tone for the other ones moving forward. I think one of the things that maybe people are talking about, I haven't read all the comments based on that poll, but if you're a player, why wouldn't you want to negotiate with the Leafs? Because they can offer contract structure, and that's not a Dubas thing. That's MLSE having that power, that financial power to offer structure that really favors players. I mean, even when they were going after John Tavares, they front-loaded the thing like crazy. They front-loaded Mitch Marner's deal like crazy. You know, loading up money, getting it in the player's pocket right away is such a benefit to the agent and such a benefit to the player. And Toronto is able to offer that because they're a cash-rich team. Like, I know the Winnipeg Jets, for a while there, they had a policy. We don't do signing bonuses. Like, we just can't afford to do it because we need the gate revenue. And MLSE is blessed enough that they can offer players a little bit more up front. And, you know, as soon as it's in your bank account, you start earning interest and all that thing. So I think that's part of it. And, you know, why an agent would want to deal with a team that's flush with cash. I don't think it's all just, hey, Kyle's a bad negotiator. I think that's a little bit narrow-minded thinking.
Agreed. Luke, appreciate the time as always, man. Hopefully we'll have a little bit more momentum towards the return next week. Have a good one. Best of the family, and we'll talk next Saturday.
Okay, take care, guys. Thanks for having me on.